Welcome, and thank you for standing by. Your lines have been placed on a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session. At that time, if you'd like to ask a question, you may press star followed by one. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. And now I'll turn the call over to Kathy Harvin. You may begin.
Thank you, Shirley, and thank you all for joining us today. There continues to be great interest in influenza. Today we'll provide the latest FluView numbers and advice on preventing the flu and what you can do to reduce the risk of flu or serious illness. We're joined by CDC Acting Director, Dr. Anne Schuchat, and we're also joined by Dr. Alicia Fry of the Influenza Division in CDC's National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases. They will both respond to questions after the briefing. I'll now turn the call over to Dr. Schuchat.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us today. We were hoping to have better news to share today, but unfortunately, it looks like this flu season continues to be particularly challenging. Our latest tracking data indicate that influenza activity is still on the rise overall. In fact, we may be on track to break some recent records. Before getting into the specifics, I just want to recognize that we know this issue is personal to so many Americans and that there is a lot of fear and alarm about this flu season. There have been far too many heart-wrenching stories in recent weeks about families who've lost loved ones to influenza. And unfortunately, this week's report reveals more somber news, with an additional 10 flu-related pediatric deaths for this season. That means we have now received reports for 63 children who died of the flu so far this season. I also know many of you are asking how this season compares to previous ones and how much longer it will go on. But flu is incredibly difficult to predict, and we don't know if we've hit the peak yet. In the past 5 seasons, influenza-like illness has been elevated for between 11 and 20 weeks, and we're only at week 11 now. So we could potentially see several more weeks of increased flu activity. Here's what we can tell you based on the latest data. Levels of influenza-like illness across the country are now as high as we observed at the peak of the 2009 H1N1 pandemic. This doesn't mean that we're having a pandemic, just that levels of influenza-like illness are as high as what we saw during the peak of H1N1. That's a signal of how very intense this flu season has been. And let me remind you that the influenza-like illness measure is based on outpatient visits and emergency department visits. In addition, overall hospitalizations are now significantly higher than what we've seen for this time of year since our current tracking system began almost a decade ago in 2010. And the rate is approaching the final rate of hospitalizations that we observed at the end of the active 2014-15 flu season. That was our recent severe season. There's a graphic on our news media site that shows those hospitalizations in comparison with previous seasons. And you'll see there that we've not just crossed the line for 2014-15, but we're quite a bit higher. The proportion of deaths attributed to pneumonia and influenza is 10.1% this week. That means 1 out of 10 people who died in the week that has passed died from influenza or pneumonia. Influenza A, H3N2 viruses continue to dominate this season. But these viruses are often linked to more severe illness, especially among children and people age 65 and older. However, we're seeing an increasing proportion of B viruses circulating, as well as a smaller increase in the proportion of H1 viruses. Last week, B strains made up 30% of the tested viruses. And we actually usually see better vaccine protection against B. This week, 48 states are still reporting widespread geographic influenza activity. Oregon and Hawaii are reporting regional or less widespread activity. Last week, we reported that parts of the West Coast were seeing declines in flu activity. This is still true for H3N2 viruses, but some Western states are beginning to see an increase in influenza B activity. It's not uncommon for there to be second waves of influenza B activity during an influenza season. In past seasons that looked similar to this one, an estimated 34 million Americans got sick with flu. Now I want to turn to talk about prevention, because it's important to remember that there are ways to reduce your risk of getting sick, which can be crucial in a season like this one. We do continue to recommend getting the flu vaccine to prevent flu. I know there are ongoing concerns about whether the flu vaccine will be effective this year, and it's true that flu vaccines often have lower effectiveness against H3N2 viruses. However, some protection is better than none. The vaccine's effectiveness against other flu viruses like B and H1N1 is better. And because of the ongoing intensity of the flu season and the increasing circulation of influenza B and H1N1, we do continue to recommend vaccination even this late in the season. I also want to reiterate the importance of the pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. Flu can make people more vulnerable to secondary infections like bacterial pneumonia. We recommend people 65 and over get the pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. Most children have already been vaccinated against pneumococcal disease from shots that they got when they were infants or toddlers. While we need to get flu vaccines every year because the viruses keep changing, the pneumococcal vaccines are more long-lasting. You also can help reduce the spread of flu through simple, good health habits like staying away from people who are sick, frequently washing your hands, and covering your cough and sneeze. And for people who are already sick, please stay home from work or school. That's such an important recommendation to follow. Otherwise, you run the risk of spreading the virus to others. And what may be mild symptoms for you could be deadly to someone else. Antiviral medications are an important tool for treatment. Now, it's important to remember that most people with flu will feel ill and should stay home from school or work, but most of them won't need to see a doctor, won't need to be tested, and won't need to get antiviral drugs. Antiviral medicines are recommended for people who are very sick with flu or people who are at high risk of serious flu complications who develop flu symptoms. People at higher risk of developing serious flu complications include those who are very young, very old, pregnant women, and people with conditions like heart or lung disease. Clinicians don't have to wait for confirmatory flu testing and should begin treatment with antiviral drugs immediately if they suspect flu in a severely ill or a high-risk patient. There is a lot of flu out there right now. If it looks like flu, it probably is. Antivirals could mean the difference between a milder illness and a hospital stay or worse, and they work better if they're started earlier. There's been a lot of interest in the availability of antiviral drugs. Although we know there have been spot shortages in some places experiencing high flu activity, manufacturers say there is product available. For patients, that might mean calling more than one pharmacy to fill a prescription. Staff here at CDC have been working closely with the commercial supply chain and pharmacies to address gaps in the market and increase access to brand products when the antiviral generics aren't available. We appreciate the efforts of suppliers, pharmacies, and insurers to try to smooth things out for consumers. I also want to talk about some of the more severe symptoms that families should watch out for, because it's important to understand that the flu is not just a sniffles and a cough. The more severe symptoms include a persistent high fever, difficulty breathing or shortness of breath, a rapid heartbeat, and significant tiredness or confusion. Another severe symptom is this. You start to get better, and then you suddenly feel much worse. That could indicate a secondary bacterial pneumonia, and you should seek medical attention immediately if that's happening. I know it can be difficult to assess those symptoms, especially in young children. About half of the cases of hospitalizations for influenza in children have occurred in previously healthy ones with no underlying conditions. That's why we strongly recommend parents get their children vaccinated against flu each year. It's important for parents to speak with a healthcare provider at the first sign of trouble in their child. Flu continues to be a priority for us here at CDC, and we're working 24/7 to protect Americans from it. This is a difficult season, and we can't predict how much longer the intense flu activity will last. But if we all stay vigilant and take steps to fight the flu, we can help reduce the risk of getting and transmitting it. Now I want to turn things to the moderator for questions.
Thank you, Dr. Schuchat. We are now ready for questions, Shirley.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one. You will be prompted to record your name. To withdraw your question, you may press star followed by two. Again, press star followed by one to ask a question. And one moment, please, for our first question. Thank you. Our first question comes from Helen Branswell with STAT. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Hi, thank you very much. Dr. Schuchat, you said in your intro that this year's season is breaking some records. I know it's hard to compare one season to another, but can you give us a sense of you know, why you say that? What, you know, why this is, how, when you stack this up against previous years, is this such a bad year? And at this point, what is the year prior to this that you would use as a comparator?
Yes, thank you, Helen. There are a couple questions in there. The influenza-like illness activity is of the most recent week is at 7.7%. The previously recorded high for that in that system was 7.6% for a non-pandemic year, and that was in 2003-04, where you'll remember we saw a very difficult year, early year, hard on kids, new Fujian strain, and so forth. So ILI is now at the same level as that peak week of the H1N1 pandemic. A second record situation is in terms of the hospitalizations. And I need to caveat that with the system of tracking hospitalizations like this really started in 2010. So we can't go back all the way to 2003-04. But one of the areas where we're really seeing unusual levels of hospitalization is in non-elderly adults, where so far this year we've seen 63.1 per 100,000 people in the 50 to 64-year age group be hospitalized with flu. In 2014-15, that number was 35.1. So that's our most recent severe season, and we're quite a bit higher than that. We're, as I say, on track now with the overall number of 59.9 per 100,000 hospitalizations overall. We're on track to exceed the end of year, or to be similar to the end of year rate of hospitalizations for 2014-15. But we don't have any signs of hospitalizations leveling off yet. So the information on pneumonia and influenza deaths is consistent with similar severe years, but I would say the hospitalizations and that under a younger age group, as well as the higher levels of ILI, are where the records are.
Thank you.
The other thing to say is that it's just week 11, and the Bs are increasing, so we really don't feel that we've got the end of the season in the next couple weeks. It could be several more weeks of flu. So it's partly where will we be at the end of the year. The other comment for those aficionados of all this data is that we usually see the increases in influenza-like illness and hospitalizations a couple weeks before we see what's going on with pneumonia and influenza deaths. People may have lengthy hospitalizations before they finally die from flu. So there's some lag there. I wish that there were better news this week, but almost everything we're looking at is bad news. The one bright spot is that the H3N2 viruses numbers are coming down, and those are the more severe strains, we think. So, you know, we just have to keep, you know, keep being vigilant. Next question, operator.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Maggie Fox with CDC. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Thanks, NDC. But you mentioned that people should stay home from work. We've been talking to people who have been fired, including a nurse who lost her job for staying home from work. Can you talk about the importance of having sick day policies, paid sick leave for people? Thanks.
You know, thank you for that question. It's such a difficult dilemma for people. We know that no one wants to lose their job for being sick, and employers that have policies that are good for their workers can actually be good for the workplace. We've seen some schools that have to dismiss students because too many people are sick to keep the school going. This type of season is really hard on families, communities, and workers as well. Next question, operator.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Mike Stobie with Associated Press. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Dr. Shukat, you said earlier something that we usually see better protection against B. Is there any more information you can give us about what the vaccines, how well it's doing against B, and also on vaccine effectiveness? If it turns out when you guys have the vaccine effectiveness numbers that it's not very good, do you think that it's because the flu viruses, because they're mutating while the vaccine is being made in the eggs? And if that's the case, what's the plan for vaccine production for this coming fall? Are we going to make vaccine the same way, and might this happen again?
Thank you, Mike. We don't have our results yet for the vaccine effectiveness against the different types. We hope to get that in the near future. The Canadians who have a similar strain circulating and similar vaccines in use have already reported their preliminary results, and they did have a higher effectiveness for B. I think it was about 55% compared with the very low results that they had for H3N2. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see something like that. And as we've been seeing these B strains increase, it's one of the reasons we've said, you know, even though it seems like it's pretty late in the year, because the vaccine takes about 2 weeks to give you protection, we do think it's worthwhile for people who didn't already get a vaccine to consider getting vaccinated. The issue with the low effectiveness against H3N2 that we've seen over the years, and that was particularly striking in Australia and Canada, and that we'll be looking for in our data, has raised a lot of questions. I think there's a lot we need to understand, whether we've been talking, and the scientists at NIH as well have been talking about these egg-adapted changes in vaccine-grown, in viruses grown in eggs to prepare vaccines, whether there are short-term and longer-term steps that could be taken to reduce the risk that that will happen. It may be that there's vaccine viruses that can be selected that are less likely to have that problem. And it may be that there's merit in exploring other approaches to vaccine production. You know, there are cell-based vaccines and recombinant vaccines, but as we've been saying, we don't know yet that there's differences in effectiveness of the different types of vaccines. It's a key question that people want to look at, and more studies are expected. I can say that the U.S. government, Department of Health and Human Services, is looking at this season's data very carefully and meeting to talk about longer-term approaches to improve flu vaccines. Next question, operator.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Lena Sun with Washington Post. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry, Dr. Shukat, I'm having a little hard time hearing you, so I wasn't sure some of the words that you said. In your opening, you said this season is on track to, and I think you said some break something records, and I wasn't sure what the in-between was. And you also said that in answering Helen's question that another sort of bad thing was that you're seeing increases in ILI and hospitalizations. I mean, that normally you see increases in ILL and hospitalizations a couple of weeks before the pneumonia deaths. But you didn't fit, I wasn't sure if what you're saying is, and is this season different in that all those are coming at the same time?
I'm sorry about my volume. I'll try to make sure to speak louder. I believe at the beginning what I meant to say was this season we are on track to break some recent records.
Okay.
In terms of the lag, I wasn't saying that this season is different. What I was trying to say was we have very high influenza-like illness activity. We have very high hospitalizations. Our pneumonia and influenza deaths are not yet very, very high compared to previous years, but unfortunately, more deaths are likely to happen. So that lag that I was describing was meant to say that over the next few weeks, we do expect it would make sense to see lots of pneumonia and influenza deaths. The people who are likely to die may already be in the hospital, basically. That was the message I was trying to convey. And again, sorry about the volume. Operator, next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Brenda Goodman with WebMD. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Hi, Dr. Shukit. I just have a question about the B strain starting to peak and whether you've seen such a close overlap before between the A and the B strains. And then we've heard from some of our readers questions about, you know, could I get the flu twice in one season if I get different strains? And anecdotally, we've heard reports that some people have been diagnosed with an A and a B strain at the same time. And are you hearing about any of that? Is that contributing to some of the severity?
So the B strains often, or it's not uncommon for B strains to increase later in the season. The idea that a person can get infected with A and during the same season get infected with B definitely happens. So it's one of the reasons that we say even if you've already had flu this season, it makes sense to get vaccinated because it could protect you against the other strains. In a season that's so intense like this, we may hear of more of those cases, such as your readers are reporting, where a person got one and then the other, and it is possible to get the two at the same time. I have a virologist sitting across the table from me shaking her head vigorously, so we know that it's not a lab error that can happen. Next question, operator.
Thank you. And this question comes from Randa Suarez with WBUR. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Hi, I was wondering, so you talked earlier about kind of, you know, the rate of flu in the West. I was wondering if you had specific numbers for New England as a region, and if not, where I can find those numbers.
I think we can get back to you after the call with more specifics. I would like to say that our website has what we call FluView, where every week we update numbers, and there are state-specific or maybe it's region-specific data in there. But we can get with you after the call. Somebody can follow up with you. Next question, operator.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Courtney Norris with PBS NewsHour. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I was just curious if you could talk more about, I believe you said Oregon and Hawaii were reporting less widespread influenza activity. If there's any, you know, reason why or, you know, what's known about why those two are less?
You know, most years the influenza season starts and ends at different times in different places. The places where it started earlier may be the ones which are starting to see improvements earlier. One of the unusual features of this year was that we've had several weeks now where so many states have had high activity at the same time. That contributed, we think, to some of the spot shortages in antiviral drugs, because often it's, you know, the East Coast and then the West Coast or, you know, the Midwest, but we had so many states with high levels of activity all at the same time. So I don't think there's anything special about Oregon. Hawaii, of course, is very special in many ways, but I think, you know, with a very different season than a lot of places. But I think that Oregon may just have seen the season come a little earlier than other parts of the country. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Catherine Roberts with Consumer Reports. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. Two things. First, can you give us a little more detail about what's being done to address these spot shortages? How long does a response usually take, and is there talk of dipping into the strategic stockpile reserves? And then two, to what extent are you seeing consumer interest in alternative treatments for flu given shortages in antiviral drugs and the severe season generally?
Thank you. The supply of the antiviral drugs exceeds the demand that we're having. Although prescriptions this year are higher than in previous years, there are millions of doses, literally, that have been produced. The efforts have involved staff here being in contact with the producers of both the brand and generic drugs, the distributors who handle the shipments, the pharmacies and the large chain stores, as well as the pharmacy benefit managers and and actually a number of insurers. One of the things that was done was ask pharmacies to try to stock larger amounts rather than, you know, trying to reorder. Another has been working with some of the companies and the pharmacy benefit managers to address, you know, it may be that in a particular store there's no more generic, but there is branded product. So there's been efforts to work with the parts of the system to, in some cases, allow the brand to be used either as a generic in terms of the prescription that was written or as a preferred brand, which is less costly than a usual. So there's been a lot of cooperation, I would say, in the different parts of the system. How quickly is there adjustment? I would say it varies in different areas. The large chain stores do have quite a bit of the of the market and are working pretty closely to try to correct things. So I absolutely want to say I'm so sorry for the people who are having trouble finding medicine that they're looking for and the efforts people have had to take to find a place that has the that can fill their prescription, but that we're working hard with the system to try to improve it as quickly as possible. The strategic national stockpile is not needed. There is the commercial supply is there, and the strategic national stockpile is not used to displace the commercial supply. Next question, operator.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Sarah Choi with Wall Street Journal. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Thanks for taking my question. So we were told of a case where a woman delayed filling her antiviral script due to cost. She was eventually hospitalized and passed away from flu-related complications. Earlier you mentioned antivirals could make the difference between a hospitalization or a mild illness. And from what we've heard, it's the most effective early on when a person starts showing symptoms. Can you tell me a little bit about what the best time it is to take these meds and at what point does it not really make a difference anymore?
I really can't say when it doesn't make a difference anymore, but the studies suggest that taking medicine within 48 hours of beginning symptoms provides the will give those drugs the best chance of working. In some of our studies, it may be 4 to 7 days after symptoms began. There was some benefit in terms of reducing complications, but the best data come from the randomized controlled trials that looked just really at the duration of symptoms and found that if you could start the medicine within 48 hours, there was a significant shortening of how long the illness lasted. Most of the data about reduced complications, like hospitalizations or intensive care unit admissions, comes from observational data, and there are some qualifications that need to be made about the timing there. But I would say that, you know, we do want clinicians to know that if the person looks like they have flu, don't wait on a test result, or if you get a negative test result and that person really, it's the time of year right now where most people with respiratory illness that looks like flu do have flu, that you should treat if it's a person with a severe presentation or a person with underlying risk conditions. Next question, operator.
Thank you. Our final question comes from Michelle Cortez with Bloomberg News. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Thanks so much. You said that the
that we're seeing more ILI than going all the way back to 2003. When we look at the flu view that you guys put out today, just a couple of minutes ago, it looks like we're already kind of exceeding the swine flu levels that we saw. And you said that we're above 2003. I know that your data doesn't go back, you know, the method that you're using now. But when you just kind of look, I'm sure you guys have expertise there. How far back do you have to go beyond 2003 to see a season like this? And then the follow-up to that is the swine flu and 2003, those are both new viruses or new strains, and we're not seeing that. My understanding is that this strain is actually similar to what we saw 2 years ago. So why is it that this strain is seemingly hitting so much harder than other years? Thanks.
Yeah, thanks. One thing I want to say about the long-term comparisons, there's a lot of things that are different from 2003 to now. You know, one thing is that a majority of children actually get vaccinated against flu now, and we weren't routinely vaccinating children. You may remember 2003-04 was an early season and really severe in children, and really after that season we started to make deaths in children from flu nationally reportable because that problem was so great. I think in terms of all the records and so forth, because we do have higher vaccination in children, because the H1N1 and B strains are often more of a problem in children than the H3N2 focusing on the older populations, you know, I think we're going to have to see in the end how well the vaccine's working against children's influenza and whether we're breaking records in kids or not this year. Hopefully the full toll on children won't be as bad as in those earlier years. In terms of the question of, you know, 2009-10 was a pandemic strain. It was a novel, you know, reassortment from a couple different species, the bird, pigs, and people. And the 2003-04 was a new H3N2 strain, the Fujian strain. We're still characterizing this year's virus. This year's virus isn't new in terms of antigenic drift, the way the 2003-04 strain was, but our virologists and others around the country are studying the virus to see whether there are other explanations for the more severe disease we're seeing. We're also still looking at the vaccine effectiveness and trying to understand whether there are host differences, things like prior immunization that might contribute to something. But I think we have a lot to learn still about influenza, including about this particular season. But it's a wake-up call about how severe influenza can be and why we can never let down our guard against this virus, because it is a very, very the virus is always changing, and we need to stay faster than it in our changes. Thank you. I believe that's the last question. I really appreciate the interest, and our website will have that graph that I mentioned, as well as the whole flu view.
Thank you, Dr. Shukit and Dr. Fry, for joining us today, and also thank you to the reporters who've joined. For follow-up questions, you can call us at 404-639-3286, or you can email us at media@cdc.gov. Thank you for joining us. This concludes our call.
Thank you, and that does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation. At this time, you may disconnect your lines.